BFF, Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. My name's Ash, and I'm joined with one other guy. I got Todd.
Hello. We are missing one tonight. Scott is at work down on the coast and was having some login problems, so it's just the two of us.
Yeah, and we're running excessively late tonight, which is, I guess, normal for us, but just got back from running a call, which we'll get into a little bit later. Tonight, we're just going to recap the last couple of days here. Both of our departments ran a few calls, actually, just in the last 48 hours. Really, it's been nothing until that, but a couple toned-out structure fires. Actually had some pretty good fun on both of those, some pretty good work. A lot of good points to make. And then we've had, with the cold snap that we've been having here in Western Canada, a lot of water lines breaking. So fire suppression lines, water lines, been out dealing with that. So let's start off, Todd. Why don't you talk to us about your guys' call, which actually came just after our call.
Yeah, so to start off, so today we got paged out for a structure fire, and it was kind of nice. I was just chilling out on the couch after another alarm call and thinking that, like, oh, comes up as a structure fire. I was like, oh, hey, we got something. Came out as kitchen fire, grease fire. So a whole nasty trucks are driving down. And we hear it's, okay, this is at one of the restaurants in town. And since I heard the location, I was like, ah, probably not going to be much. They got a newer building, really good fire suppression system. Probably going to not turn out to a whole lot. But went through the motions anyways, and we got there quick. I was the first to engine in with my crew. We rolled up with four guys. Our chief got there as IC, got a really good report for us on what was going on. So we were able to go meet for a quick face-to-face, find out that there was fire in one of the deep fryers, but it sounds like it's out now. So we were tasked to go in, look for extension and do a primary search, make sure there's nothing else going on there, and isolate any, of course, hazards and stuff, and see if there's any smoke and stuff, things that we needed to clear out just for that more public service aspect afterwards. So when we went in, it was, there was absolutely nothing. It sounded like it ended up burning itself out in the deep fryer, to the point where actually it was really hard to find which grease fire it actually was, or which what do they call it?
Betrayer.
Yeah, like your deep fryer. Sorry, couldn't think of the word. Which deep fryer it was, because there's an assortment of them, but they're all very clean. I got to the point, we checked everything with the thermal imager. There wasn't a lot of splashes or anything, so it was a very, very clean environment. No smoke or anything, no even smell. We were able to take our BAs off at that point, saw nothing, and just did a good primary and isolated the power to the units. But it was really good. Everybody did their roles. We'd always talk about, you know, practices you preach, and so this one, it came out as a structure fire. So we went in with our first attack team. Went in with our tools and tick. We didn't need a line at that point. So we talked about having an extinguisher with us. Second truck came in. They established RIT. We isolated the gas and the utilities to the building, precautionary, until we could actually get in. And, everybody did really well. It was really good to see. A little bit warmer during the day, so it was nice. So when we're actually setting up our RIT tarp and going through the motions, we weren't freezing cold like we were a couple nights ago on all the water line breaks. But, it was good to see that everybody is just really dialed and really coming in, and just quick, easy commands like, hey, your team is RIT. This is what I need. Boom, done. And everybody just takes that role and owns it, right? So it was really good to see that everything that we're practicing is coming out into fruition. So, yeah.
Yeah, Todd, I think that's great. We were chatting before the podcast here just about that, like, on calls like that, like, once you know where you're going, once you know what the building is, like, you already kind of had that thing in the back of your head. Hey, let's prep for the worst. But the likelihood, this is going to be not a nothing call, but you could definitely kind of get your brain a little bit more relaxed and kind of fall back to that training. So just making sure that you're hitting all those marks, like, let's go in, let's isolate that gas, let's get a RIT team established, let's send in a team to do some inspection for any sort of, you know, fire extension or whatever, right? Let's make sure it's safe, let's get the fan out if we have to vent the structure or anything. So just kind of tagging all the base points that you really want to hit for any call, when there's nothing, like no major stressors over top of your head to do it. Because, you know, like we and everybody else always says, you always fall back to your training. So being able to hit those marks like right on the head on the calls that are much less like stressed out. Like when you have a really complex call, I'd say like we still hit those marks, but like that elevation of stress is definitely there. So on a call like that, the stress level isn't quite there because, you know, you pull up on scene. All right, there's really nothing showing. Let's go through the motions. Let's make sure that we're doing everything right. And if you have a couple of newer members on there or some less experience, they get to see that as well. And there's huge, huge things that they can take back from that call.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we had a really good group discussion afterwards as well. And even back at the hall, at my hall and hall too, we had a discussion. We just like, how you go through your mindset rolling up to these events. I was chatting with another firefighter about, you know, depending on what role you're in, what you're thinking, you know, so that firefighter was talking about, okay, well, if I'm going to be driving the truck, okay, because of the cold temperature, what do I need to do? I need to make sure the drains are closed again. Cause we have everything open in the drain positions. So before I start pumping, I need to do that. Do I need to prime? What are we going to do with the water source? So they were already thinking all that steps if they're in that role. And I just reiterated that, absolutely, that's what I do. That's what I expect all of you guys to do. If I'm in the jump for that truck, I'm already painting a picture in my head from the information I have from the page of, okay, what building is it? Where is it? Okay, I hear it's a grease fire. Okay, this is what we're going to need. Okay, now it sounds like there's no potential fires. Okay, we don't need to tag the hydrant. So I always said, generally, if I'm in the truck, you'll hear me like the first kind of two blocks as we pull away, I'm not really saying anything much to my crew yet because I'm still listening to the radio. I'm formulating my plan. They need to be formulating their plan in the back of what role they're going to potentially be doing, building that picture, kind of that windshield server we talk about as we're approaching. Then as we get more information from IC as before we arrive on scene, now we'll start talking. Oh, hey, guys, this is what I need you to do. I need you to grab the hydrant, or I need you two guys. You're going to be the attack team. I want you to start stretching a confinement line, you know. I'm not going to nitpick and say which side of the truck or what, like, you know, you do that estimation as we arrive. Like once we park, if they're going to be that attack team, that nozzle team, they need to pick which hose line is appropriate. You know, they need to say, okay, do I have fire showing? Do I not have fire showing? What's the stretch from the truck to the door? You know, how many feet of hose am I going to need? What's the potential stretch from that door to maybe where the seat of the fire is? You know, is that side pre-connect going to be enough, or do you need to grab something from the rear? That's for them. They can decide that. You know, they're building that picture in their head. So we had a really good discussion, and again, just practice what you preach, right? It came out really well. It was a good event for a pretty much non-event fire. So it was good. It's proud of everybody.
Yeah, you know, again, that's a really good point. Like, I think in years past, people were kind of looking for the officer to be giving instruction almost right out of the gate. Like we realistically don't have any added information than everybody else responding. So, you know, I might say, hey, we're either going to be going with the 2.5 or we're going to be going 1.5. You know, I'm definitely going to need somebody on nozzle. We're going to need, like, there's certain things that, hey, we've got multiple calls to fire showing, blah, blah, blah. Okay, like, that's a no-brainer. We're going to be stretching a hose line. So, hey, I need a crew of two on a hose line. I need this and this. But I don't even know what kind of hose line I want you to stretch yet until we have either IC on scene or we put eyes on it. So we might be, as first you, the first people putting eyes on it, or maybe IC gets there in front of us more often than not. And that's the information that the IC is going to be giving us. Like, hey, I'm looking for, like, either an aggressive attack with the 2.5, or we're going to be going 1.5 hand lines and making a push, whatever it's going to be. But until we get that info back, I mean, there's really not a lot to say. And again, I think in years past, people were kind of looking for that. Like, we want to know something. Well, yeah, it's going to come. Just allow it to unfold in front of us. And when you turn around and look at the crew that you have behind you, you know, like, we're training with these guys and gals every single week, and, you know, we go and run calls, and if you look back, you can kind of already tell, like, all right, where are some of the strengths, like some of people's like shining strengths are. And if you look back and you have a dialed crew, the actual task list that you give them is nothing more than, all right, I need two of you guys on suppression. I need two of you guys on exposure protection. And that's the end of it, right? Or whatever it might be. You're not really painting any more of a picture other than you already know what the job is to do. So just go and do it. Rather than, hey, I want you to do A, B, C, D, you just give them the end goal and say, hey, you two, I want you guys to make entrance. So whatever that means to you, which I know what it means to them because we're the ones that are doing it with them. So, okay, they grab the tools, they grab the thermal, they grab a hose line, and they're going to the front door. They're about to make entry. I've got somebody coming up as a backup to be the door control. And that's realistically the end of the first truck's job. Like, that's what they're doing, and we're waiting for added people to show up. But those people in the back seat know what that means, and that falls back to that training. If you dial that in and just hammer it, like, those early arrival tasks are so important. And the more that your crew is, I guess, confident in those early arrival tasks, the better success rate you're going to have on, like, structure fires and scenes that are potentially more complex. But if you can't get success in the calls that Todd just talked about, you're not going to have that success on the more complex calls.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's 100% on the nose. Like, it's we had this discussion actually last week after we did one of our complex scenario structure fire simulations. So we were talking about, okay, like, you know, some guys were asking, well, you know, if we have a complex structure and we've got fire and smoke showing, you know we need to confine the fire. We know we're going to be doing a transitional attack. So we start out by getting water on that fire from the exterior, resetting that fire clock, and then transitioning our teams into an interior attack. So we already know, as soon as you hear, hey, I have fire showing out of the Bravo side window or the Bravo side door, we know we need to suppress it. So you already know you're flowing water. You know you're stretching a line. Which line is it going to be? Is it going to be a 2.5 or is it going to be an 1.75 or something? You may not know that right away, but as we're approaching that scene and we're seeing, getting that our own windshield survey, if command already hasn't said that back, hey, I want a 2.5 stretch for confinement. Okay, we're stretching 2.5. If they haven't said that and we see it for our own crew windshield survey, that's when they say, hey guys, we got a major fire showing 2.5. With that 2.5, now we need to know, okay, are we tagging that hydrant? Is there a hydrant handy right away? Or were we told or are we tasked to pull up on scene and start stretching lines first, and that second new engine is going to 100% every time then tag that hydrant for us? But there is going to be a bit of a delay. So if we're pulling a 2.5, we had that conversation. You got to be well aware. Don't just be spraying water like you're surrounding drowning. You know, you're spraying enough water, you're suppressing it, and you're shutting it down. You're communicating with your pump operator, hey, this is how much water we have. We just want to knock it back and slow things down as we get our other team in place for that entry push. So we had a really good discussion point on that, because some guys were like, oh, well, like, am I going to be stretching the line out and spraying water kind of before I'm told to do so? I said, well, yes, but I'm telling you in the truck, that's what we're doing, because we know that's the tactic if we have fire showing. If you don't have fire and smoke showing, we know we're going to be pulling a line, but we don't know what door we're going to yet, or it's event limited fire. So then, yeah, maybe you might have to hold back, start with your 1.75, stretching it out, and then we're going to decide, okay, where are we going to go? Because we're going to get that information from IC when they do their 360 of the best entry point of that, because we can't just start stretching to an exact door until we know, hey, maybe the better access is actually from the Charlie side. So then you're limited again about, okay, well, did I grab the right hand line? If I'm going to be dragging around to that Charlie side, do I have enough hose line now to make that interior push? You may have to initially stretch a longer hand line from the back, or start with your 2.5 and then connect an 1.5 or 1.75 to it. So really good discussion points, but we know as firefighters in that back seat what your roles are going to be. So make that decision, have that chat in the truck, and then deploy it. And it's working. Training's working.
Yeah, awesome. So we actually had same day, just before yours, we got toned out for a structure fire as well today. We got toned out. Scott's down at the coast, so he's getting the IM responding updates. So he actually hops on Messenger. He's like, Todd, get yourself ready for mutual aid. So he sees where it is, and it's actually kind of really close to the border, just the back roundabout way. So it was really close to our mutual border, way out of the way. Like, it was the last structure fire that we had about the same distance. It took us the same time to get on scene. I was looking at the call sheet and all the timestamps. It took about the same time for us to get on scene for this structure fire as it did for the one on New Year's Eve. So definitely, like, it's the outskirts of our coverage area. So Scott's thinking mutual aid right away, especially the timing. Came in at like 8:30 in the morning. We're always a little shy on members. That's just people getting themselves to work, getting the day started. The realism of being able to get away at that hour is always a little bit more of a challenge. So, like, for me, as I see, that was in the back of my brain immediately. So dispatch comes in and says, we have a single caller of a structure fire on this road. We're kind of way hell and gone, but they kept saying it was just a single caller. And, like, whatever that was, they just kept kind of, you know, reiterating, still just a single caller, still a single caller. I'm like, okay, I get it, but I mean, is somebody lying? Like, is this fake? No, it's got to be a structure fire, so, or something burning at least. So I responded direct, said, let's get the engine and a water tender coming. Let's get both of those staffed and rolling immediately. And I was like finger on the trigger, thinking mutual aid. Once I got on scene to put eyes on the fire. So I get to the address it was mapping us to, and it wasn't quite the right address. So I'm looking around. I'm like, I don't see anything going up that road. I could kind of see where the structure was there. So I'm doing that, like look around for clues, right? There's got to be something going on here. If it's a heavily involved structure fire, there's got to be a clue somewhere. And if I look further south, sure shit, now I can see the column. So I continue on knowing that I'm going, you know, quite a bit past where it was mapping us to. I get to the driveway entry, update dispatch of the correct address that, yes, we do have a structure fire happening. So I push in and get the officer truck position out of the way where I could see everything that's going on, and just kind of gave that, like Todd was saying, gave that windshield survey and seeing size up before I even got out of the truck. So I get myself in park, dispatch, we have confirmed heavily involved structure fire, single family dwelling. It was more like a bungalow type of a building, definitely not a full home, but it was somebody's primary residence, but like a single person. He had some dogs that were living there with him. The person that lived there luckily was not home at the time, but I think overall it's like kind of 12 by 20 structure, one of those more of a tiny home. It was definitely heavy involved. We had a massive propane pig that fired whatever else inside, heat, maybe their stove, whatever else. So talked about exposures, talked about some of the safety concerns. And then because of where it was and some of the things that were around the structure, I actually didn't even start my 360 survey until I saw Chief Bob coming in the command car. Once I saw that he was coming up on scene, that's actually the first time that I hopped out of the truck and started to do my full 360 assessment, just so somebody else would have eyes on me. Just the nature of the residence and whereabouts it was and everything else. I just wanted that second set of eyes before I ventured around the backside of it. So Chief got on scene, had a quick look, no other issues for safety concern. And by that time, Adam in the first view was getting close and he asked what I was looking for. Said whereabouts to park, let's stretch 2.5 inches, one around Alpha Bravo and one on the Delta. And then confirmed it was going to be a defensive attack surrounding the drown. Just where it was, it took us 10 minutes to get myself there, plus another 3 or 4 minutes to get the engine there. It was heavily involved. There was no going inside. But we did an aggressive exterior attack, I would say. I got it knocked down just to preserve any, anything that we could, possibly preserve for investigation purposes, or, heaven forbid there was something or somebody inside still. Try to preserve whatever remains are there. And then basically, luckily, there was nothing. Everything was good. Again, it was confirmed there was no one home at the time. There was a couple dogs home. The neighbor came and got him out of the pen, got them out of the way immediately. So all in all, it was such a... We definitely had a lot more fire than you guys, but like it was just that super basic, like back to basics attack, just stretching a couple hose lines, being aware of your surroundings, working as a team to extinguish it, and ended up transferring command on the back end of it to one of our senior firefighters that's expressed some interest in kind of stepping into potentially a lieutenant role, or at least if nothing else, into a training role. So somebody that is definitely showing interest in furthering themselves within the department. So we left them on scene for mop up and fire watch, and the two that were left did an awesome job. So yeah, I mean, nothing really major to talk about tactic wise. It was super, you know, like really, really basic, super basic, but awesome job by everybody there. I don't have the info stamps on me, but it was something like it took us 10 minutes to get on scene. It took another 6 minutes or so to get the engine on scene. We were flowing water within 4 minutes of them being in park, and that was the time stamp to dispatch. And that 4 minutes is not 4 minutes. That's just by the time the airways were free, got the update. And then 9 minutes after, the entire fire was struck, and we were moving to mop up. So amazing work again. Everybody was just hitting those marks. We did get a second tender rolling out to us. I had a couple of people question, like, oh, why didn't you send out another engine with a whole bunch of people? Well, again, now we're 9:30 on the very end of our area. I knew I had two or three guys left back of the hall. That's a start for whatever call might come. I did bring another tender out there just for extra water because we're miles away from any hydrant. And I got those guys on writ. Like, we're not going in, but we're working on BA. Again, like, we don't know what's going on. There's, I don't want to say a problem area because that's not the right word, but like lots of like people that live around here, like me, including Todd, we allegedly may or may not have a lot of firearms and a lot of things that are inside the structure. And you know what? You don't know what you don't know. So just having a crew, even though we were exterior only, on a quasi writ, you know, in case like a wall collapses outwards on you, like we were taking every step to be as safe as possible. But I still put a couple guys out on writ just to be aware, just so there's an extra level of safety there. And it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's one thing that people tend to overlook. And you know, the exterior ops can still be quite dangerous. So it's always handy having that red team established and being there for backup if we need them. Because, yeah, as we know, in overhaul mop-up, sometimes that's when things happen. And having guys there, it's the best practice. So, yeah. I know I was listening to the comms at that point, because I got the heads up on the text, like, oh, maybe mutual aid for a tender. The first thing I thought was like, oh, well, crap. Our tenders are over at hole one. So I got to go to hall two, grab my gear, and then make it go across town. I'm like, I'm not going to make the tender. And then I heard you guys' truck roll. I was like, oh, maybe I will. I might have time. So I started rolling down to the hall slowly to go grab my gear and head over to hall one. And then I heard this is a pretty small event. And, you know, you weren't too worried at all. And you were just rolling the tenders, and that was it. So I was like, oh. Yes. Turned around, went back home, and then I lost interest and shut the radio off. But yeah, it's you know, it's definitely a consideration that we need, and we've talked about lots on this podcast, is calling that mutual aid early if you need it. And there's so many considerations, like you hit, Ash, like it's that time of day, right? Like it's the edge of our areas. You don't want to roll all your resources out there if you don't need them. If it was a different style of an event, or like a really like a large family home and there's multiple things going on, yeah, you'll need a few more bodies, even if it is still just exterior only. But for that size of the structure, yeah, one truck company is totally adequate.
Yeah, so where it was initially mapping was Spud Allen. And there's some large structures back there, like a full multi-level residence, as well as multiple outbuildings. So that was my concern. I'm like, if it's just one of the outbuildings, again, single apparatus, fine. If it was the main structure, 100%. And the difference of 5 minutes of me getting myself on scene to call for that mutual aid, I didn't think was that big of a deal. let's go put eyes on this. Like, I would have had mutual aid rolling before our engine built on scene. So that was in my mind right off the jump. You know, if it was in the summertime and we had that exact same call, even on that structure, I would have called mutual aid. You'll have ember showers coming. You know, the possibility for extension is so high on something like that. Like, this is in the middle of, like, wooded grassland, sagebrush, like that heavy greasewood where it's burning rapidly, ground fire, but you want to have that extra apparatus on scene, whether I was calling you guys for like a brush truck or an engine for whatever, if we were doing tactical controls or getting you guys set up for some bump and run tactics, whatever it was going to be. But at minus 20, we're a little less concerned about that. But the main concern, like Todd touched on, was we limited the apparatus that was flowing water. We limited shutting off the bale. So if you have a hose line stretched, it was open. You weren't shutting that bale completely, allowing that water to continue to flow and keeping that pump and recirc. So you're always flowing like semi-warm water. Pumping back through recirc allows it to kind of like heat up a bit. You can actually feel the water temperature coming out of the nozzle is, I mean, it's still shitty and cold, but it keeps a bit of temp in there. The guys were great. Everybody was really, really mindful about that. Even when we swapped over to just the tender, they got the pump running right off the hop there, had it in recirc, so we didn't have anything freezing up. And they tried to wait to charge a hose line as late as possible. And they said, they were like, well, is that steam that I see? No. Let's see what happens. Piss, I see flame again. Okay, so they went back and they did have to stretch a couple lengths. But in mop-up, actually, they ended up just stretching some forestry line because it's super easy. It was only going to be exterior ops anyway. It's way more... user-friendly with just two of them there. If they're going to be out there humping hose from the Alpha Bravo all the way around and then back, and they're like, yeah, let's just stretch this. This is easy. It's just from mop-up. You got the combi nozzle on the end anyway, so I'm like, yeah, I don't care. Like, this is your guys' baby. I don't see anything wrong with it. If it kicks up, you're obviously going to have to switch over to the other line, but at that point, you're asking for us to come on back on anyway. So, yeah, I thought it was a great, great option, and they were on scene for probably another 2 hours or so, just to be safe. We all could have left at the same time. And would we have had a little issue here and there? Sure. But it wasn't going anywhere. But it's also like, don't leave until the job's done. So leaving a crew of two on there, like we've been burned in the past, we all have. You don't want to go back, especially that far out. So just leaving a couple of guys there for another 2 hours rather than keeping five or six people for another hour makes a lot more sense. And two of them were off today anyway, so I'm like, well, I just gave you half a day's pay and thanks for your time, and they were happy to do it. So got some awesome experience being the lone crew out there, and yeah, hats off to them. They did a really nice job wrapping up. I went out to check on them right at the end, and they were wrapping up the hose lines and getting ready to pop back in the down, and yeah, it was done. Wow.
Yeah, it's funny, like any of these extreme cold weather events that we have, when we have a working structure fire, not even a working fire, but it changes all your tactics so much. Like, the shit freezes up and then everything's wet and you're just creating an ice rink half the time. So you got to definitely be aware of that and sending your resources out too, right? Like, if one truck's not going to be doing anything, you don't want it just sitting there. It's definitely, you got to keep that in the back of your mind as, do we really need that truck? Under normal circumstances, we maybe have rolled another engine, but in this cold weather, that one event, well, one engine is totally adequate. You start looking at the past fires that we've had in these cold weather events. Man, like, when you get a couple engines out there and you're spraying a ton of water, it's a nightmare. I've never had a pump or anything freeze up, but we've had bales freeze up, mm-hmm. had hose lines freeze up, and then everything's a skating rink, and now you're dumping sand, and your tools are iced up. You can't grip anything for overhaul. It's just a nightmare. And for us, we don't get a lot of that. We're in like Buffalo, New York, where it happens all the time. It's kind of one off for us. So, you got to switch gears a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So in our area, we get that minus 25, minus 20 every year for a week or less. So it's not something that we get into a ton. We're aware of it. We kind of live like in the winter months here, 0 to -10. Like that's kind of like right where we live. We'll get some like flash freezes where it gets down a bit cooler. Last year we had, was it last year?
Yeah.
We had like a pretty good stretch and it was unseasonably long. But this is out of the ordinary for us. And then for us to catch something that's actually working, like something that we're going to be flowing water, doesn't happen often. So being mindful of keeping your apparatus back at bay if you don't require it, even like we'll get into these water breaks. We were trying to release the engine as early as possible because you're not even flowing water now. Now it's just sitting there idle at minus 20 and you can start getting, I mean, you can drain pumps, you can drain manifolds, whatever. You still have like stagnant water sitting places and that's going to freeze. And as long as it's nothing of like size, like not a lot of it, you're going to be okay. But every hose line is going to be carrying a bit of moisture. Every bale, every manifold is going to have some left. You're going to drain most of it out with all of your pump drains and everything. But like, there's always water in these trucks. Like you walk by a truck after draining everything and you open like a rear discharge and like, shit, how's there still water here? We open the drain. Well, water settles and it'll eventually seep itself to the bottom. So you may have drained it after the last call, but like, is drained ever really drained? Well, you start moving the truck. Now that water's shifted. Well, you've closed your pump drains because now you're on scene ready to rock. Maybe you did flow some water. Well, now you're not flowing anything. You have everything charged. So getting that back at the haul, back in service for the next call, getting it out of the weather is key. Like, I lost basically my radio on that call just from being outside next to them flowing water. Like, I wasn't near a hose line, but there's just that moisture in the air when they're working, and all of a sudden I'm trying to key up my radio. I look down at the mic and it's got like not icicles, but it was, I'm like, shit, I gotta like bang it on my jacket and try to get it to work again. I'm like, I didn't even get sprayed through my water. Where the fuck is this coming from? But it was just, I was in the area when guys were spraying water. And I'm like, oh, shit, I guess just from the moisture and being in the truck when it was warm, coming outside, being near them when they're spraying, I'm just going to back myself away another 10 or 20 feet and set up. I got a little rock I was standing on, so I wasn't directly in a foot of snow, and it was perfect. So kept myself out of the way, but I'm like, shit, I'm not even doing work, and my shit's already freezing. Guys are walking up, and it's that classic, like, you see in some of the bigger cities where, like, their helmet's covered, just the front of their BA is open, and guys, we're getting that moisture freeze up. Like, you got moisture inside of the mask. It doesn't matter what you do, it's just starting to freeze up. I'm like, yeah, go throw your mask inside of the back of the engine, let it thaw out, and swap out for somebody else. I mean, we're all staying outside, but you still have to be masked up when you're even close to the structure. So, yeah, guys, we're having the tag in and out. So just being aware of that, and, you know, cycling guys, keeping everybody fresh. Cold sucks.
Yeah, 100%. And that's a good point. You always forget about the diaphragms and your mask. Like, that stuff, it's such a pain in the ass when it starts freezing up because all that moisture and humidity. And yeah, it starts freezing up like a son of a bitch right away. And yeah, you got to think about that, cycling those guys out, get them back in the truck, take the mask off, thaw it out, your BA as well. And yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah, so speaking of not fun, so tonight, just before we were sitting here and a call came in, and then we had one again the other night. I feel really, really bad for them. So there's a apartment complex locally here, and they have had some real shitty luck with their sprinkler system in these cold weather events. And every year we get a call there, and they're working to mitigate this, but it's not done yet. So we had one the other night, alarm call. We run down there. I'm on duty, but Rob is driving right past there. So he's like, it's water. So he stops. I didn't have the officer truck, which has all of like this shit that I need on it. So I'm like, hey, Rob, if you're on scene, if you want to get it started, I'm actually going to rip to the hall, grab the officer truck, and then come back. So I drove past the scene, knowing what it was. Rob got everything started for me. I came up, got the report from Rob. We got an engine there, and it was the other night was third floor on one of the exterior units. So from the third floor, second floor, first floor, it was heavy water flow, burst pipe. All three units got damaged tonight. Luckily, it was just the first floor, but the same thing. So on those calls, there's not a lot that you can do. Your main thing is to make sure that you get all the residents out of the affected areas. Shut off the water. So figure out, can I shut off a system? Can I shut off just one of the floors? We've got that system pretty dialed now that we can roll in immediately, get it shut off. Tonight we get on scene and one of the ladies is like, yeah, we have it shut off already. I'm like, oh, you guys are shutting off the water. I go in there. I'm like, I don't know what you think you shut off, but it's still on. So we shut everything off. And like what people don't realize is when a burst pipe under pressure has been flowing for 15, 20 minutes and it can only seep through the ceiling, there's a lot of water that hasn't come down yet. So when you shut off the supply, it's going to be draining out for half an hour, 45 minutes. And people don't think about what kind of weight is just hanging over your head. Like, we had residents that were fighting us to go back in the building because they want to get their cat or go get their meds. We're like, just buy us a half an hour of time. You know, the cat's going to be fine. Your meds are going to be fine. Everything's sealed. Just give us a moment here. Let's make sure that it's safe for everybody to enter. And once we know it's safe, we'll let you back in or we'll go and get it for you. But just give us that moment where we can deem your area safe. And then get, you know, you and whoever else needs to go back in. But we were looking at it tonight. And like I say, we feel terrible for them because from last year until this year, there's been 6 units have been affected by suppression system failure. And of those 6, 3 of them are still out of the building. So we got the restoration company coming up right away. And like he kind of joked. He's like, I got to hire people just to work here. Like he's got a crew there almost 24/7. They'll be working there again tonight, all night. It was him and his son. So they came, ended up getting Earl on the phone to come and work on some electrical. So one of our lifetime members here was on his way over. Johnny's on the phone. He's like, yeah, Ash won't let us turn on the water, turn on the power until you get your ass out of bed, which is true. Like, the moment that we saw that unit was affected, we went straight to the electrical panel, killed all of the power to the unit, which is just going to protect the unit, protect anything that might be plugged in, as well as protect us while we're entering and exiting. And I wouldn't let anybody back in. Like, even once the water stopped, like, he's like, oh, I can see it's not running out of there. Like, can I go back in? I'm like, no, like, I'm not okay allowing you back in until I go and have a face-to-face with the restoration company and we make entrance, you know, together and deem it safe as a team. Because I'm going to be giving the scene over to the restoration guy. I don't want to say yes if he doesn't want you in here, and he's not about to say yes unless I say it's safe as well. So working as a team, we actually deemed, okay, like, I don't mind you guys going back in. We'll gather anything that you need, but I still don't want you in or out of here until the morning. Yeah, so it was really, really basic. Like, not a lot to really chat about. They're just a pain in the ass, really.
Yeah, 100%. And people tend to forget, you know, like, that water, like, unless a big chunk of the ceiling gives away, generally, like our past few water breaks the past couple nights, same thing. You know, you walk in and you got water pouring out of every light switch, every electrical socket, out of the ceiling fans, power's still on to everything. And it's like, man, no, like, we got to mitigate this. We got to shut the power off the suite, make sure everything's safe for everyone. Like, we understand the urgency. They want to get back in and do things, but we will do that for you. That's why we're trained in this overall and stuff. Like, go in there. We will help protect as much items as we can. Like in the past, we've made water chutes out of pipe poles and tarps, you know, to try and collect that water and get rid of it out of an adjacent window or something. You know, and yeah, like it's definitely the top priority is to help these individuals out as best we can. But Yeah, they need to be a little bit patient for it. I understand the frustration. It's pretty hard. We have this couple of buildings, same thing. The other night, two suites out of the one building went. Year before, same thing. It's the same event with the fire suppression system. And it sucks. It costs them a lot of money to try and fix it. So they are working to mitigate it, but they're not quite there yet. But it's a pain in the ass. It really is for everybody, all parties involved.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are really either super hot when things on fire or super cold when things breaking. Those are your calls to service when it's cold, right? And touch wood, we haven't really had any MVIs. We haven't had a ton of new snow that is in the forecast coming up. And generally when you get like a snow event coming through, you generally get people in the cabbage. And now you have that coming up all on your plate. But I don't say basic calls, but those like bread and butter calls, which you fall back to your level of training. And if everybody's got that dialed in, you know, base level of training, just the base, you're really set up for success. I look back at, you know, the past few days here, past few calls have been non-technical calls. And then we go back to the New Year's Eve or the New Year's Eve and then New Year's Day call. New Year's Eve even and New Year's Day call. We had the structure fire, definitely very complex. And then the cement truck rollover, and it was definitely a technical type rescue. The gentleman was in good shape. He was just pinned, but we did chat about that on the show here as well. But, you know, in both scenarios, complex and technical, and the complex and technical, and then kind of that bread and butter. If you break it down to the base level of training and just flow like you've been trained and flow like we've been doing every single time, the recipe for success is there, and we're seeing it, and it's such a good feeling. And you know, in years past, we've joked about like we're like that, hey, attaboy, everybody did a really great job, which is awesome. Like, we want to, you know, bolster guys' feelings and, you know, boost them up and lift them up, right? You also want to be realistic and talk about your shortfalls when you're out on these calls, because that's where you can learn. So doing a good tabletop or doing a good bumper discussion post-incident is really, really key. But these past ones, like kind of getting back to that attaboy, is people did a really great job, whether it was super complex or super basic call. Seeing that success coming off the back end of it feels really good. And just setting ourselves up for a hell of a 2024.
Yeah, absolutely right. We give credit when credit's due, and we also need to take ownership when we need to learn things. And I think everything that we're, both departments, as we're doing with the leadership styles and the training, it's really starting to show. So it's really good to see. Yeah, but yeah, I think 2024 is starting off hot. We got a big weather event coming in here tomorrow night and next day, but big snowfall. It's starting to warm up, so we're gonna get more frozen pipes bursting, and we'll see what this weather event with the snow comes for people in the cabbage. So probably have more to talk about next week.
Yeah, and then hopefully next week Scott's gonna be dialed up again. He just got finished wrapping up a task force leader course this past weekend. Him and Grant, he's been on before as well. He's the reason why we have an explicit lyrics badge. I think he was our first person to swear. Awesome guy, super dialed for forestry. So him and Scott went and did a task force leader course, so they can basically run a scene outside of our area for BC Wildfire. So really excited to hear how that went. Sounds like there was the second day sounds like it really picked up in a lot of like tabletop and big like, I don't know what you call it, sims or scenario based stuff. So look forward to hearing that. Anything else that you got going on you want to bring up today?
No, I don't think so. Looking forward to the conversation next week with the task force leader stuff, because of course this is the time when we train for next year's forestry events. The theme is dry and droughts again, so we're expecting another pretty bad forestry season, whether it's going to be in our area or other areas where we're sending crews and trucks out to help, see what happens. But yeah, by having guys take these courses, it benefits everybody. Definitely benefits us locally as well to have the local faces as task force leaders if we have an event again in our area. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that discussion.
Yeah, heck yeah. We've got an Engine Boss course that we're hosting coming up here, so that's going to be a really fun thing to help plan for, set up, and then not taking part because we already have it. But I think, Todd, you're trying to get in on it, which is going to be great. We've got a sprinkler protection course being offered up in Willowbrook, one of our neighboring departments. And then we've got Spring Seminar, which we've just committed to sending a couple instructors, myself included, and then some of our junior firefighters. So really, really excited for some of the things that are coming up this spring, which we'll definitely chat about a bit more in the upcoming months. But yeah, lots of stuff coming up. Definitely really, really excited for what this spring is going to bring.
Awesome. Yeah, sounds great.
Perfect. Well, let's get ourselves into some shout-outs. We'll always start with Modus. They're big, big supporters of ours, and we're major supporters of them. Their claim to fame, if you will, is still the Snagger tool, used for hose line handling, hose couplings, dangling out of a building, whatever else. There's 1,001 uses for it, but they've got tons of other stuff to offer. Force entry, soft entry, tons of textiles now. Their AutoX gloves. They've got version 2.0 coming up for their rescue pouch for AutoX. That's coming to us now. We're going to demo that up. Lots and lots of gear. So check them out on their social media. We've got some videos on ours. And if you like what you see, which you should, use discount code DTFF5 for 5% off your order. Todd, stopping and bleeding.
Yeah, Stop the Bleed, stopthebleed.org or .net or .com or wherever the fuck you want to find it. It's out there. But also check out our YouTube. We've got some course content of that program as well, and how to make wound packers and do all that jazz. So, of course, direct pressure, tourniquet application, and wound packing, and carry a good tourniquet.
Yeah, beautiful. You see Todd right now is taking a big old sip of the Wolf Tree coffee, which we'll chat about now. Did you get your order in before they left?
Not before they left, which I should have, because I thought I had a lot more beans, but we've been grinding away at work like crazy, so I don't have a whole lot left. So I have to wait.
Nice. Yeah, we got, I just cracked one. I got two more spares. So I've been going through coffee like crazy because we seem to be staying up later and later these days, which is definitely getting to me in my old age. As we're sitting here doing our podcast, I'm looking over here. I'm like, what has happened to me? I am an old man. Like, this is insane. Oh, man.
Just join the club, man. They can't see it. You look younger when it's gone.
I don't think so. Anyway, Wolf Tree Coffee, based out of all over British Columbia. I've been making coffee here locally for a while. Every other night when I'm driving home and they're roasting, oh, man, does the neighborhood smell so good. Yeah, they have a ton of blends. One of them that we're super partial to is the Initial Attack, which we partnered up with them. It's a beautiful medium dark roast. And $2 for every pound sold, they have been donating to the Honor House Society. So you got Honor House down in the Lower Mainland, and then Honor Ranch up in, what do you call that, neck of the woods?
Up by Ashcroft area. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a beautiful retreat for first responders, military men and women. Great place to go and unplug PTSD, whatever reason that you might need to get yourself unplugged in a way. Lots of programs. I think they offer programs on site, as well as you can bring a group of your own in. Yeah, just an amazing group. And we're super, super happy and honored to be working with Wolf Tree, that has came on with us back for our seminar. And then they've been keeping it going ever since. And the blend is actually getting a lot of traction. People in the fire and emergency services love it. People outside of it. I mean, anybody with a good feel story, a good feel-good story, really kind of gravitate towards that. But then you try the product and it's amazing. So it's my personal favorite of everything that they sell. Some of the others are like obviously really good, but yeah, I mean, we came up with a blend, so we better be partial to it. But yeah, check them out online, Wolf Tree Coffee. They do free delivery in the South Okanagan, and they will ship worldwide. So yeah, check them out, Wolf Tree Coffee on Facebook, Instagram, and their website, wolftreecoffee.com. Talk about Tanner Olson.
Yeah, Tanner Olson Band, originally out of West Coast Canada, and I guess they technically still are, but Nashville, that's kind of the new home base, it sounds like. So yeah, they're down there working hard. They're playing some gigs down there and doing some tours. And yeah, they're a fantastic band. We've had them here. We've talked about them in the past. They've done some shows for us, and I love them. They're great. They're high energy. They perform amazing. So yeah, check out your normal listening platforms that you find the music and give them a listen.
Beauty. Anything else on the shout outs other than us that I'm missing?
I don't think so. No, I think just us.
Sweet. So yeah, lastly, we have ourselves here. I'm sure if you're listening, you've already found us on this platform, whatever that is, which could be anywhere that you can download and stream podcasts, as well as YouTube. All of our podcasts go up on YouTube as well. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. A fresh reminder, we do have a brand new TikTok account that got started, and I will take full responsibility for why we have a new TikTok account. So I was, however many years ago, way back in the day of Carl still being a part of the show, he's like, "Oi, mate, let's get a TikTok going there, guy." And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, it's the bloody future." And I'm like, "Ah, I don't know. It seems like it's just people twerking." And I mean, there's still a large portion of that on TikTok for sure, but the amount of content that is out there is huge. The problem with me is firefighting is also not the only thing that I enjoy. Like, I love, you know, motorsports, power sports, hockey, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's a million and one things, plus all the random shit that we all send each other. So the algorithm, I don't think, not people twerking, but I don't think that genre of TikTok is really all that interesting in firefighting. So we have a new one, so I can actually use it for what it can offer in its entirety. And it's dedicated to firefighting. So please, if you do follow our TikTok, head on over. It's dtff.podcast. I have been resharing everything that the new TikTok has been putting out. But if you can migrate yourself over there as well, just allows me to have a bit more freedom on whatever I want to look at, and not mess up the algorithm too bad. But yeah, so we're on all the social medias. Give us a like, share, subscribe, comment, and just engage with us. We all have access to it. 99% of the stuff you're going to get my wife answering initially, but she's dialed in. Like, that's what she does for a living, is social media management. So she's going to get back to you right away. But she brings it up to us, where in years past, it's been all of us monitoring it. And we don't know if Todd's seen it, or if I've seen it, or Scott, or whoever. So this way, we know you said something. We'll see it. Even if we don't say something back immediately, we're still going to know that you said something, and we appreciate that. And we all chat about all the comments, and you know all of you guys and gals posting about wearing our gear out in the wild. Like, those things are awesome, and we can't say enough about that. So we definitely appreciate everything. We definitely appreciate you guys giving us that like and share and subscribing. Helps get us out in front of more and more people. So again, thank you. Any more, Todd?
No, and on that, for getting our gear out in front of you, we still have some shirts. So on their Facebook, you can see a link. Click on that, and it's the dtffstore.com, and get one of our Moose shirts out to you.
Yeah, one of the major comments that we keep getting back is winter hats and winter hoodies coming. So people love the hoodies, and they love the zip-ups, and they love the hats. So once we sell off a little bit more of the stock that we have on our shirts, which has been going out, which is great, we definitely, I don't want to say over-ordered, but we got a really good deal because of the quantity that we purchased, which has allowed us to keep ourselves competitive. I mean, we're just a group of three people that invested our own dollars in it. So we did get a ton, and we're definitely getting on the backside of that first order, which is great. If we get a little bit further, we definitely want to move towards another design, or a similar design in a hat or a hoodie. So if you're interested in either one of those things, continue to like and comment on any of those posts. Give us a quick message on the messenger. You can send us a quick message there. and we'll kind of put you on that pre-waiting list, because they will eventually be coming out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I'm a big hat guy, so it's time to get some hats going.
Yeah, beauty. So on that, thank you very much for lasting this long. We figured it was going to be just a quick podcast thing. Here we are, an hour deep, which is pretty par for the course for us. So thank you very much. Appreciate you guys listening. As always, stay safe, stay DTFF.
Good night.